And welcome back to the Greg Horrendous Show, where we are honored and privileged to have a Jersey boy back on the airwaves of WFDU. He needs no introduction. If you are a college basketball fan, and you are, it's Jay Will, ESPN host, St. Joe's Metuchen, Plainfield, New Jersey. The coolest dude, well, compared to Seth Greenberg, that's not hard. The coolest dude. Jay, welcome.
I appreciate the compliments, Coach H. I really do.
Oh, man. Listen, Jay, it's really special to have you on because, number one, you're one of the youngest. For some reason, I'm 58, but I rock it. Well, I'm 57, actually. I'm going to be 58. I'm psycho. But I usually, my guests have been a little bit on the older side. I got somebody that's into Jay-Z, somebody that's 38, so we got a 20-year gap. And you just connect with college basketball, our players. And I just look at you as always a young dude, man. Do you
Coach, I just want you to know that I'm 37. Don't give away what
okay,
next year.
Okay.
You don't have to.
Okay.
And also, Jay-Z is considered old to these kids now.
No, you know
like
what?
21 Savage and
you're right.
Little Yachty and Little Baby and
you're
all these
right.
things. So I'm going to stay with you, though. We're going to keep
me,
it young and relevant.
But
I got you.
But for me, you're young. You know
I'm with you.
And especially my audience. My audience, we got a lot of old cats that just love FDU basketball and love Fairleigh Dickinson. But, Jay, I remember – and we spoke about this last night. You guys played. I know you don't want to think about it. You had a lot of success at Duke. You played an incredible game when you were at Duke against Stanford, got hit in the eye, and I don't know if you got scratched or just
boned. No, I got 11 stitches in my left eye.
11. Check this out, Kenny. I'm an associate head coach at East Carolina. It's right before Christmas. I get on the plane. I watch the game. I get on the plane. And I've got an aisle. I don't know how Coach K, they didn't hook you up with an aisle. You on a window. And I sit down and I look and I'm like, that's – and back then you were Jason Williams. I'm like, oh, my God, this is like a dream. I watched the game. Now you're flying back from Raleigh to Newark for Christmas. And I just talked to you briefly. You were so tired and so beat up. And then when I brought it up to you last night, you were just so annoyed – about that game. Tell me about that Stanford game back in the day, dude.
Well, first off, it was the only game that I had. Well, I had celebrities talk trash to me before, but that particular game, Tiger Woods was sitting courtside talking trash to me.
Stop like,
really,
it.
Tiger Woods is talking trash to me, really? And I actually missed a layup to win that game. We were we were down two, and there was about 5 seconds left, and I literally took the ball the length of the floor,
right,
and missed the layup to win that game over one of the Collins twins.
Yes.
So obviously, you know how it is when you obviously you're coming off a loss, and everybody's like, "Oh, Duke." I'm like, "Don't talk to me about that. I just lost a damn game."
Exactly.
So I was a little bit lost in my emotions, which it's funny because you never remember your wins; you always remember your losses, right?
Amen. You know what? That's so true. And the losses hurt so much. But and the wins, I mean, you've won a national – how many national championships did you win you were there? Just one?
We got one, yeah. But don't worry. Each – my freshman year, the team we lost to was Florida, who got all the way to the championship game. My sophomore year, we won the whole thing.
Yep.
And then my junior year, we lost to Indiana, which is ironically funny because my wife graduated from IU. You can't make this stuff
you
up.
You cannot.
And her family loves to remind me of it all the time. And I miss a free throw. We lose that game. IU goes on to lose to Maryland, a team we beat 2 out of 3 times that year. They lose to them in a championship game.
That's right. So Maryland won.
They love it. That's
my life. Who was the guard at Maryland that that got it that year?
D. Blake.
Yes.
D. Blake and Juan Dixon.
And Juan Dixon. Hey, this is classic, though. You're talking about all your missed free throws and all the, you know, the missed layup. Kenny, this dude – now, tell me if I'm wrong, Jay. Your last game in Cameron, they retired your number. True or false?
True.
That is usually it takes time and money to get that done, dude. You know what I'm saying? It's like, okay, after 5 years and after, you know, 50,000, I don't even know how much money. But for you to get it done while you were a student athlete, did you know before that game – that it was getting done, or was it a surprise? How did that go down?
Well, they kind of told me that it was going to happen.
Okay.
You know, I spent so much time, you know, and I think we all do this. I know that you have to do this too, because we're built the same way.
Okay.
Sometimes you get so lost in your work because it's not work.
Right,
Greg? It's your passion. It's in your blood. It's what you do that you don't pick your head up to look at your accomplishments. And I was so fixated on trying to win another championship. And
right.
I was on track. I was graduating school in 3 years because I overloaded both of my summers before my freshman year, my sophomore year, and then going into my junior year.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't until after I got hurt that I kind of put it into perspective that, I got two-time National Player of the Year. Like, I was, I scored 92 points in 3 years. And
it's nuts what you did.
It's something that now I have a daughter, and my wife's like, are you going to tell your daughter?
Right.
But I just don't know if I'm built to talk about it all the time.
Right,
you know,
right.
I'm just too busy. Like, I have my own game that I'm in now with my family and my job. And
exactly.
I don't think that ever stops, does it?
It never stops. And especially like, because you want the next thing to happen. Like, we play Sacred Heart. We're taping this on Tuesday. And everyone's like, you have a 5-game winning streak. That is so behind. It's in the rearview mirror. It's the next. It's like, I know it's a cliche, man, but it's the next play, the next game, the next. That we have to keep climbing and digging. Let's go backwards here. Not all the way back, Jay. You committed. My associate head coach, Bruce Hamburger, reminded me, we were talking about this, you committed to Rutgers.
I didn't commit all the way, but I wanted to go to school.
Wait
at
a minute,
Rutgers.
You're either pregnant or you're not pregnant.
Well, I wasn't pregnant then.
All right, then
I was close.
Tell me.
I have so many different things I want to say right now that I'm not going to say in that comment.
Tell me what happened with Rutgers. Kevin Bannon was the coach, and Bruce thought you committed. Then I'm like, yeah, I thought I remembered that as well. Tell me what happened, if you can, in a nutshell.
It was around that time they had this little incident about some players.
That's right.
Running some sprints.
I got
you. Clothing.
Enough said. Yes.
Yeah. It just, you know, like, everything gets so amplified in Jersey, being a Jersey kid, and I still want to be a part of Rutgers because they had Dante Jones.
That's
and
right.
I wanted to stay at home.
That's right.
But my dad just wasn't.
Right.
My dad kind of nixed it.
Gotcha.
And then when Coach K sits in your house, you know, a couple weeks after that, you're like, okay.
I mean, your eyes
open. It's going to be hard
up.
To say no to that.
I'm telling you. And Mark Taylor was your coach back then. He's at St. Benedict's now.
God, he's Mark Taylor had me playing the 3 and the 4. Greg, I got to tell you, one
you're
of the most awkward,
enough.
Funny conversations I've ever seen in my life is Coach K is over at my house.
Yeah, I love this.
And it's him and Johnny Dawkins, who's now at UCF.
Right.
And we're sitting there with my mom. And look, we're a black family, okay? Like,
sure.
My mom doesn't know how to cook Polish sausage, but she was trying to cook Polish sausage for Coach K, right? So everybody's kind of joking around, and my mom made this Polish-like meal. And
that's cool.
We're having a good time. And,
yes.
You know, K, when he talks, obviously everybody, you know how it is.
Listens,
you know, everybody gets quiet.
He's
what
the
does Coach K have to say? And he's like, you know what? Jason's the best point guard in the country. The best point guard in the country. And we think he can come in, he can play right away for us. And I'm not going to promise you he's going to start, but I think the kid has potential and he has the heart of a lion. And without hesitation, Coach, without 1 ounce of anybody saying anything or even having eye contact, Mark Taylor looks at him and he's like, well, I don't really see Jay as a point guard. He's more of a 2-3, personally, in my opinion.
Oh, no.
And everybody's like, Mark Taylor, like, what are your credentials? I know you played at Fordham, but, like, we should probably listen to the Hall of Fame coach.
Yes.
And Coach K was like, no, you know, I disagree with you, Mark. I think he's a bona fide point guard. And then Mark goes, well, you know, Mike, agree to disagree. You know,
And you remember that like it was yesterday.
Oh, yeah, because then 2 years later, we won the national championship, and guess what position I played?
And I think you
I was the two. And Mark Taylor was like, told you, Coach K, he's more of a two.
I love it.
Oh, is this? I can't with it. And that's
only
Jersey
in Jersey
Bobano,
would
you know
only
what I mean?
Only in Jersey would a high school coach step up to Coach K. You know what I mean? Like, no one backs down. And St. Joe's in Metuchen, we recruited. I'm not sure if you know this, Jay. Marcus Towns And Marcus Towns came to Fairleigh Dickinson. We won a championship, and he transferred to Loyola Chicago and then took the helped take them to the Final Four. So I recruited Marcus Towns. I saw Karl Anthony Towns practice. And the day I saw him practice, he was like a joker. He was like calling for – you know how he could – when he was young, he was he was a different cat. I recruited – Mike Skoka back in the day when Bill Kuchar was the head coach.
Yeah, yeah.
So St. Joe's Metuchen, man, that's a special. And did you play, we did some background, how good are you in chess? Or is that just like you just threw it out there? Are you a chess player?
I was the captain of my chess team.
I love it.
And I still play very often. It's my release.
Who do you play with at ESPN? Anybody we know?
I don't get a chance. It's not like, come on, coach. It's not like I carry around a chessboard looking for a pickup game. Chess, you know what I mean? Anybody want to run?
You have a lot of time to kill there, don't you?
That is true. I think a person I would actually like to play is SVP, just because I feel like Scott Van Pelt is.
Oh yeah, somebody that. Yeah, yeah. I can
kind of wonder
that.
What kind of opening he would
be
give
like
me.
The Bobby Fischer kind of dude.
Exactly.
Right?
Yeah. Like he might set me up and act like he doesn't know how to play, but he really knows how to play.
Exactly.
So, yeah, I played chess. But you know what, though? Chess was a game that taught me so much, and it's very similar to the game of basketball, right? You have to recognize that there are runs that people are going to make, and you could think that you have the upper hand on somebody from a strategic perspective, scouting report, but sometimes you need to adjust. And by the way, this has happened to me in my life all the time. I always ended up guarding that one guy that shoots like 10% from the three-point line.
And he kills
And I was supposed to shade off of him and help on the real score. And then the guy has like 25 points on me because he makes 9 of 10 from 3.
That's me as a coach, too.
Oh, God. It's typical with those kind of analogies. All right, like I have to adjust my game plan on the fly and sometimes be patient and sometimes have a sense of urgency. So
Jay, you had to adjust. You were a pick of the Chicago Bulls back in, I think it was 2003. And then you have a tragic accident, and you talk about adjusting. And I read just an excerpt, almost a chapter, of Life is Not an Accident, a memoir of reinvention. And I asked you last night, dude, did you really write it? Because it was just very gripping and very it hit home quickly. And you wrote it. Can you speak about that night or that whole period of your life and give our fans an up-close and personal view of how you had to reinvent and how you had to adjust to a tragic incident?
Yeah, I would use an oxymoron to be a little bit more descriptive about it because it was a tragic opportunity.
Gotcha.
It was deemed as tragic at that time, but I realized as I've gotten lucky enough to still be here on this earth, that it was the best opportunity that was ever afforded to me because it just made me recognize what I had in front of me. That was I shouldn't have had a motorcycle, but you know, as we all know, when you're young, you shouldn't do a lot of things.
Yes.
Sometimes you still do them, and I have ways of justifying that because you know a lot of players in the NBA had motorcycles, and I went to my agent's house to have a meeting with him, and as I was leaving, I jumped on my bike, and I started going down the street. I put the bike in neutral, going around 25 miles per hour. I revved it the first time. It was totally fine. I revved it the second time, louder than I did the first. It was still totally fine. And then in the middle of my third rev, which was higher than the first two, I just heard the bike go click, click, and the wheel popped up in front of me.
God.
And I started doing the wheelie.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they have that old saying, let go, let God. But at that given time in my life, I wanted to be in control of everything.
There was
a power issue I had coming from my family and my relationship with my dad. So instead of letting go of the bike and walking away with some scratches maybe, I decided to grab onto the handlebars because I wanted to control the bike.
Mm-hmm.
And when I grabbed onto the handlebars with my momentum throwing me backwards, it forced me to pull down on the throttle even more, which forced the bottom wheel to pivot out to the side. And next thing I know, you know, I'm going around 65, 70 miles per hour, and I'm headed towards my fate, which is a utility pole. I clipped the whole left side of my body, and I end up with my chest area on the grassy knoll area between the sidewalk and the curb.
Right.
If I'm laying on my stomach and my legs are on the pavement, on the road, the street, as if I'm laying on my side, my knees on top of each other.
Wow.
And I felt as if somebody was pouring hot, scalding water all over the lower extremity of my body. But every time I would wipe my hands on my legs, it was the weirdest feeling to feel your legs with your hands, but your legs can't feel your hands back.
Right.
And
right.
So when I started pounding my fist in the ground saying I threw it all away, I knew right then and there.
It was it.
That, you know this as a guy who played and as a guy who's coached, you're so in tune with every detail in your body. You get paid to study the nuances of your body and how you work. And at that elite level, you know when your body isn't, you know, functioning at optimal level.
Yep.
Proceeded to spend 2.5 months in the hospital.
Jay, you never lost consciousness? You were awake the whole time?
I was awake the whole time, man.
Did you go into shock? You went into shock, I would imagine, right?
Or no? Yeah. I mean, my adrenaline, my heart rate was off the charts. I wrote in my book, and it was really hard for me to do because I really struggle with, you know, how much do I really bring people in to try to understand what that feels like?
Right.
To know that you have made a mistake that, in that given moment, Greg, I knew people were going to try to throw that back in my face for the rest of my life.
Right.
That initially hurt me, but more so than that, the fact that I wasn't going to be able to play a sport that I loved. And one of the most surreal moments ever for me was, you know, being transferred from the gurney to this ice cold, silver-like, metal-like table. And having people cut off, like you see in a movie. Like you see on, you know, any kind of soap that you watch or any kind of series.
Yeah.
Like just people scurrying around and seeing my leg and my leg looking mangled you know, somebody trying to tell you to breathe and to count to 100. You're like, yeah, how the hell am I supposed to calm down and breathe?
Right. Exactly.
And, you know, waking up a day later, having 3 metal pins inserted into your actual thigh, your knee, and your like the top of your calf, your shin, that's holding your leg up in the ground, in the air.
Yep.
And then 2 metal pins inserted in your pelvis, and a tube in your throat. Look, one day I go from trying to dunk on Yao Ming and trying to defend Kobe Bryant guard Allen Iverson and see Michael Jordan's first game back.
And now are you going to live or are you going to walk even?
Yeah, and the craziest part, too, is like the first question that comes to my mind is, am I going to play again?
Right.
Am I going to play again?
Exactly. And you did. See, that's the...
I did years later. I was not the same player.
No, there's no way you could have. You're not the same person, the same skeletal system. You know what I'm saying? The crazy thing, and we could talk forever, Jay, but the thing that really I wanted to ask you more than anything on this show is that the Nets gave you a shot in 2006, and then, they didn't sign you. Then I'm like, I just kept on reading, and in 2010, this is 4 years later, you tried to – you got to try out with the Heat. Like, you aren't quitting. Like, in 2010, what happened? Why did you think you could do it? I admire your attempt, but it seemed like, God, this is 7 years after that. You were still trying. What was in your head? Did you really think you could make it? And did Miami give you an actual shot?
Because I'm crazy.
Yeah, exactly.
And I know that in order to do what we've done, at that level,
you gotta be crazy.
An element of you that is crazy.
Yes,
and
that makes total sense.
And I loved it because I wasn't doing, excuse my language, I wasn't doing that for anybody else. I was doing it for me.
Amen.
And it was, I think the time I had trying to get back, go back to your original point. I was chasing the player that I was. Right, you heard that in my voice when I just said that.
Yes.
And then I think in 2010. It was like, oh, no, I'm this player now. Like, and that's okay with me. Yeah. I don't have to be the player I was.
And I can still play.
I can still play. I'm about to play in a celebrity All-Star game coming up.
I love it. At the All-Star break?
Yeah.
I didn't know that. That's cool.
That'd be great, right?
That's and I can still totally play. Cool.
I can't play at that level and sustain that level night in and night out. That's my body isn't built for that. Now, being 37, I mean, I probably would have been towards the tail end of my career anyway, or
yes.
maybe the end already. But I think that's when I finally started to accept that basketball wasn't going to be in my future in that capacity.
Jay, what's your ultimate, and the clock is ticking here, but your ultimate goal with ESPN or in broadcasting or in entertainment? Have you looked down the road, or are you a year down the road, or five? What's ahead for Jay Will?
Business. I love business. I love sports business. I think there's a huge void. Mm-hmm. I think culturally, Coach, being a young African-American male, growing up in a predominantly African-American and Latin town,
sure.
But going to school at a Caucasian Asian school, I think when I dressed a certain way or when I spoke a certain way
right.
or being athletic, I was being hood, I was being ghetto, I was being black
right.
to them. But then back in my town, if I talked about politics or something I learned at school
sure.
or if I articulated myself the way I do right now, I was being called Uncle Tom, a sellout,
gotcha.
A white kid. And you're like, well, wait a second, I'm just me. My parents always taught me about education.
Yes.
So we're about to launch a show with Kevin Durant called The Boardroom that's coming out. Well, I want to make it culturally relevant for young kids to want to be business savvy, to understand how business works, to build up, you know, themselves for their families, and not just to see sports as, hey, that's the end all. I made this money. Like, what do you do? How are you investing that money? What are you doing with it? How are
yes.
you, you know, building out franchises? It's okay to be smart. Like, back with the Jay-Z, Moment of Clarity, right? It was
yes.
one of the first times I listened to a rapper when I was younger talking about, hey, it's not about building blocks, it's about owning blocks of buildings.
I love it.
And you're like, oh, I get it. So that's the dream.
Jay, I've got to get you on campus, man. You got to come to a practice. I'll get a car service. I'll pick you up. I'll do what I – because our players need to hear that. You know what I'm saying? And you've gone through and you've gone past and you just keep on evolving into one of New Jersey's absolute – like great ones, man. Not only for what you do on the floor. Yo, dude, you play chess. You play volleyball. You're a national champion.
I know. I'm all
Chicago
over the place,
Chicago Bowl. And guess what, man? You deal with Seth Greenberg every day. How's that?
I could get a trophy for that. I'll tell you that right now.
You deserve a trophy. Jay, we're going to take you off with the Duke fight song. Jay, I can't thank you enough, man. You keep rocking it on ESPN. We're going to bring you to Jersey and to Fairleigh Dickinson soon, man. Promise me that, man.
You got it, Coach. I look forward to that.
Hey, I can't thank you enough for your time. You're the absolute greatest, and all the best to your mom and your dad, man. Keep the faith, and thank you so much again.
Greg, thank you so much, man. Thank you for lifting my spirit today. I really need it.
You're the best.
All right,
Jay.
All right.
Peace.
All right.
And we'll be back with more after this.
Hello, this is Tim Capstra, the Brooklyn Nets radio analyst, and you're listening to the Greg Herrenda Show on WFDU.
And don't forget, you can support the Greg Herrenda Show on WFDU right now by going online to WFDU.fm, clicking the donate button, and making a secure donation with your credit card. That's it, right now, WFDU.fm, and click donate.